you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Happy Saturday, everybody. This week we have an episode coming up that is related to alchemy. And at first I thought, as I was researching it, that I would want to spend the first part of the episode talking a little bit about alchemy's overall history. But it turns out Sarah and Dublina did a whole episode on alchemy back in October of 2011 as one of their Halloween episodes that year.
So we've pulled that one out of the archive for listeners who want to brush up on their alchemy knowledge. Enjoy. Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And I'm Dublina Chakraborty.
And today we're going to do something we rarely do. We're going to talk about chemistry a little bit and more generally the history of science, more specifically the history of alchemy. And I thought it might be fun to just maybe kick it off with our own experiences in chemistry. Mine are maybe not so illustrious. I don't think I've taken chemistry since 11th grade, and I may or may not have lit something on fire, maybe a French book. So, you know, I got a good grade, but I don't know if I'm.
Why
if I'm
did
the
you
best
get a good grade? After, why did you get a good grade after you set something on fire? Maybe we shouldn't go into that too much.
No, let's leave that.
My beginnings in chemistry were not illustrious either, although I did almost minor in chemistry.
Oh, that's an interesting choice then.
Yeah, I did. I was one class short of a chemistry minor, and then I chose to minor in German instead because I was also one class away from a German minor, and I thought that would be easier. Big mistake. That was not easy.
German was not easier than chemistry?
Well, I don't know because I didn't take the final chemistry class that I would have taken, so maybe it would have been just as difficult. But reading and writing, once you get to the higher levels and studying a foreign language, it's pretty difficult.
I was actually one class short of a French major, so I know where you're coming from. I'm just curious, what was the last chemistry class?
Organic chemistry one, which was kind of my downfall. I preferred inorganic chemistry to organic chemistry.
That's understandable. I definitely remember people in college complaining about that one. So as we're going to find out today, chemistry and alchemy are pretty closely related, but we've seen alchemy pop up quite a bit lately in the podcast, most recently with the episode on John Dee, who, in addition to being an alchemist, was an astrologist and a spy and quite a few other things, too, is a talented man. But we've also been getting repeat listener suggestions for other alchemists like Nicolas Flamel and Paracelsus. So all of this really got me wondering, though, what exactly is alchemy? I mean, I know most people understand the chrysopoeia aspect, so that idea that base metals could be transmuted into gold. And many, many people have probably heard of the Philosopher's Stone through Harry Potter. Dablina, you're probably just learning that now. But aside from that, there's a really unsavory aspect about the whole science of alchemy, really. And I mean, that was what honestly got my attention with the subject in the first place.
Yeah, it really calls to mind those dangerous Merlin types who slave over a hot fire, making pacts with the devil and combining alchemy with necromancy and magic, or those broken down old men who waste their intelligence and fortunes laboring to carry out hopeless experiments in dank dungeons.
Those are the alchemy stereotypes we think of.
Yeah, exactly. Or, I mean, worst of all, there are those, as we saw in the John Dee podcast, there are those charlatans who prey off people's desire for wealth and try to get wealth for themselves. Not that those aren't sometimes, or that they weren't sometimes, legitimate scenarios. Alchemy was often illegal. Charlatan alchemists were sometimes hanged. In the 1590s in Prague, which was kind of the center of alchemy in Europe at the time, a mystery alchemist of Arabic origin showed up, gathered the richest merchants and bankers of the city together, and took 100 gold marks from each, promising to multiply them. He dropped the coins in a crucible filled with acids, mercury, lead, salt, eggshells, and horse dung, and set to fanning the fire. But before he could get the bellows going, there was a huge explosion, a cloud of fumes, and then, sure enough, a missing alchemist.
With
so that's just an example.
All that gold. Yeah, so I mean, there were these charlatans, but to only look at alchemy as a quack's pursuit or a charlatan's game really isn't fair. And it turns out that much of modern chemistry really does, as we mentioned, have roots in alchemy. It's just that the real scientists, I'm making air quotes right now, didn't always own up to it. So we decided it is time for a Halloween makeover for the science or the art of alchemy. Of course, though, something like alchemy is going to have really obscure beginnings.
Yes, it is old. It's likely that it sprang up independently in different spots around the world, influenced by older arts like metallurgy, medicine, and almost always closely connected to religion, prophecy, or philosophy. It often had the same goal, too, no matter what part of the world we're talking about: transmutation for the better. So lead to gold, sick to healthy, earthly to heavenly. Chinese alchemy, for instance, was really very medicine-focused and influenced by Taoist beliefs. The idea that immortality could be obtainable went back as far as the 4th century BC.
Yeah, so Chinese alchemists like Ko Hung, who lived in the 4th century, and Sun Tzu Miao, who lived in the 7th century, provided these elixirs of life. And I really love this detail, but the British historian Joseph Needham has even attempted to determine which Chinese emperors might have died from elixir poisoning, because if you are on this quest for immortality and you're willing to drink just about anything to get it, it reasons that eventually it might not work out in your favor. Indian alchemy was also more akin to what we might see as early medicine today, also really elixir-based, although in that case it was elixirs as cures for specific ailments, less than elixirs as solutions for immortality.
Yeah, so it really was kind of like a medical industry there. Western alchemy, however, took kind of a different route. Dating from Hellenistic Egypt, the earliest known Western alchemist is Zosimos of Panopolis, who lived around 300 AD. And his theory was that there was a magical substance that could transform things. He called it a tincture, and it had a few varieties. This tincture eventually became associated with the Philosopher's Stone, or the, quote, stone that is not a stone.
And I almost feel like that needs to be a scary voice, like the stone that was not a stone is not a stone.
Well, you should have told me ahead of time.
A Harry Potter kind of voice. Mm-hmm. But
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A bold approach to engineering. At Bowling Green State University, our engineering degrees fuse the science of traditional engineering with technology and hands-on skills. This combination is what employers are looking for in the up-and-coming fields of robotics, advanced manufacturing, and systems engineering. It's why our graduates find jobs and why BGSU stands out. Don't just get a degree. Secure your future at BGSU.
For the past 30 years, Care Heating and Cooling put you first. You are the reason they are open 7 days a week. You are why they make it easy to schedule service at careheatingandcooling.com. Concern for your safety is why they check every gas furnace for carbon monoxide. It's because of you that their technicians are paid to fix your furnace and air conditioner, not sell you a new one. And if you do need a new furnace, their team will make sure you get exactly what you need at a cost that fits your budget. Care Heating and Cooling is committed to doing business right. Call them at 1-800-COOLING when you need a company you can trust.
Do you want a chance to go to the most appealing game in town? Dr. Pepper is giving away 4 tickets to the games at Huntington Park on May 24th, 25th, or 26th. If that isn't sweet enough, the lucky winners will be invited to the Pepsi Party Deck to view the games with free food and beverages. The time is ripe to enter. For your chance to win, visit a Kroger near you or drpepperbaseball.com. That's drpepperbaseball.com and fill out the entry form. Don't miss your chance to take your bunch to a game. Enter today.
Also around this time, Alexander the Great was said to have discovered the Emerald Tablet, which itself contained 13 cryptic axioms related to alchemy in the tomb of Hermes Thrice Great in Egypt. And alchemists really ran with this distinction, this connection to Hermes, and deemed themselves the sons of Hermes or Hermetic philosophers. And just one thing to keep in mind, and we're going to talk about this kind of a lot later, but the number one rule of this brotherhood was to keep it in the brotherhood. Don't go telling your secrets of alchemy to people who don't understand it. It was understood that if you devoted your lifetime to studying something like this, you could talk to your fellows, you could share experiments, maybe not even then, but it was all a very tight-knit, close community. So Arab scholars further honed the alchemical texts in the 9th century and the 10th century, and from there, it eventually spread to Europe during the scholastic renaissance of the 12th century. And probably the most famous of the Arab alchemists was the Persian Al-Razi, who is the director of the Baghdad Hospital and also really a well-known doctor and writer of medical texts by later medieval Europeans. He had a whole different name, whole different identity for that, but among alchemists, he was best known for his Book of Secrets, which was really straightforward, very clearly written, essentially a catalog of lab procedures concerned with transmuting gold and silver.
So in an article for Arab Studies Quarterly, Gail Taylor writes that Al-Razi's methodologies, his attention to details like safety and repeatability, and his easy instructions make the Book of Secrets a proto-laboratory manual. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that line of thinking later. So, okay, we've got a sense of alchemy's progression through world history, but what was it all about besides elixirs and the philosopher's stone? What science background made the work alchemists did actually seem possible? Well, first, there's a fundamental confusion between elements and compounds that we need to go over really quick. Okay, so Aristotle had proposed the existence of 5 elements, and those were air, earth, fire, water, and quintessence. Then in the 13th century, a new text appeared by the mysterious alchemist Pseudo-Geber. While Geber was often associated with 8th century Arab alchemist Jabir ibn Hayyan, Indiana University professor William Newman has ID'd Geber as Paul of Taranto, a Franciscan monk. Newman has also traced a direct line of descent from Al-Razi's Book of Secrets to Geber's Sum of Perfection. In the Sum of Perfection, which subsequently became pretty much like the Bible for medieval European alchemists, Geber honed down this idea of elements to include just two. All metals were varying combinations of mercury and sulfur. So kind of sounds like a recipe for gold making, don't you think?
You only have two ingredients, yeah. Exactly. You just got to figure out the right ratio. So Paracelsus, who we mentioned in the beginning, was a Swiss physician who lived between 1493 and 1541, and he further developed the ideas of Geber. He proposed that there were actually three basic substances, sulfur, mercury, and salt. But still, you know, you're working with a limited quantity of things and trying to make gold out of that. Because Paracelsus was a prominent physician, one who believed in observation as the best way of learning, a new type of medical alchemy really rose up around him and his style. And many doctors, alchemists, scientists worked in Prague in the court of Rudolf II, sort of striving to do experiments based on Paracelsus's ideas. But alchemy wasn't all about mixing gold from scratch, from these base elements. It eventually became about growing gold, too. And I really think this is sort of the most interesting aspect of alchemy, at least for me. But we need some context for this as well, because why would anyone think that they could grow gold? So in the 16th century Europe, there was a belief that everything in the universe was alive, and not just plants and animals, but minerals, too. Like, I don't know if you've ever grown your own crystals in a crystal kit when you were a kid. You can kind of understand where they might have been coming from. But according to a History Today article titled A New Light on Alchemy, people thought that minerals really grew from seeds that started out deep below the earth and matured gradually as they rose. So again, not too crazy, because sometimes metal veins under the earth really do look tree-like in the way that they branch off into different veins. But the key here was the speed in which the seeds grew and developed and the materials that the minerals passed through. So for instance, lava was considered a lower form because it obviously rose through the ground rapidly and wasn't anything special, at least to the 16th century Europeans who were thinking about this. Gold, on the other hand, was believed to rise very, very slowly through the earth, taking its sweet time and ultimately coming out in the perfect form. So one idea was that the material that gold passed through on its way up from the low regions of the earth was the philosopher's stone, something that was around us but essentially unknown.
So if you could figure out what the philosopher's stone was, you could make gold. And by extension, you'd have the key to perfection, something that could be applied to other worlds too, plants, animals. It would basically be the universal cure.
So it wasn't all about making gold for the sake of having lots of money. It had that other aspect, that perfect desire for perfection aspect to it as well.
And alchemist theories weren't dumb by any means. Lead ore does often contain silver. Silver ore does often contain gold. They saw these as things that were in process or ripening. And gold making wasn't the only goal of alchemy either. Other goals included the quest to find the universal solvent, the elixir of life or universal medicine, the ability to reincarnate plants and animals from their ashes, and also the ability to generate mini humans from semen and rotted horse dung.
So that one sounds a little bit out there, but we should also mention that alchemy was also closely tied with Christian and Gnostic and Neoplatonic ideas, and you couldn't just perform the experiment. So you couldn't be the modern cool-headed chemist working in the lab. You had to be in the right mindset. You had to be completely in the game, essentially. And the History Today article we mentioned even suggested that that strong belief system might have come out of the frustration of failed experiments. If you just realize that you never could make gold no matter how hard you tried. You might explain that as something you weren't quite with it. You weren't thinking the way you should have been. But just because experiments to turn lead or whatever base metal into gold did always end in frustration, sorry, it would have taken a nuclear reaction to make that work, guys, doesn't mean that alchemists didn't pick up a trick or two along the way. Alchemists did figure out things like distillation, acid-base reactions, precipitation from solution, and the refining of metals.
They also created new alloys, conceived of atoms long before atomic theory, and repeated experiments, also making sure that they were repeatable.
Kind of a basic requirement for lab experiments.
Yeah, like the scientific method.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often those of us who don't fit into this dumb stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights. Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect. Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. That's tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Atlas Butler is built to keep you comfortable, and our plumbing services are no exception. You can rely on Atlas Butler for trusted, convenient plumbing and drain service. Our expert plumbers and drain specialists can take care of anything, from a broken water heater to a clogged drain. Call today, get it fixed today. That's our pledge to you.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
They also began to shift in medicine away from plants toward minerals. In Discover magazine, Dr. Newman says that, quote, the goals of 18th century chemistry, namely to understand the material composition of things through analysis and synthesis, and to make useful products such as pharmaceuticals, pigments, porcelain, and various refined chemicals, were largely inherited from 16th and 17th century alchemists.
So that makes us have to ask the question, if alchemy was science-based, albeit somewhat mystical. Why did it develop such a bad reputation? Even John Dee, as we talked about in the recent podcast, who was living in the 16th and 17th centuries, suffered from his later dabbling in alchemy and conversations with angels. It really kind of ruined his career in a way. Later scientific geniuses like Isaac Newton spent 30 years working on alchemy, more than he did on physics and mathematics combined, but he tried to keep his interest secret. Again, according to Dr. Newman, who has extensively studied Newton's secret notebooks, he says, quote, "Alchemy became a danger to one's reputation when interest bled into enthusiasm." There were just a few fundamental problems with alchemy that were kind of hard to overcome.
Yeah, one was that the quest for gold brought in swindlers. We mentioned charlatans in the beginning and how they were hanged for alchemy. Alchemists were also very secretive, thus alchemy's obscure texts and strange metaphors for chemicals or experiments like Babylonian dragons, green lions, toads that decompose and turn into ravens, Neptune's trident.
We're going to talk a little more about that stuff, too.
And finally, authorities didn't want anyone to make gold and devalue the currency. Lots of countries made it illegal to transmute metals, though they'd often secretly patronize their own alchemists to outwit the other guy. So they, you know, on the assumption that you can do it, please don't.
Please don't, but just in case, I'm going to have an insurance policy in my own alchemist. But despite the eventually obvious connection to chemistry, alchemy was still seen as a shameful beginning for the science. In 1831, Thomas Thomson called alchemy the, quote, "rude and disgraceful beginnings of chemistry." Robert Boyle, who is a founder of modern chemistry, was embarrassed by his interest in alchemy. He called it a, quote, "empty, vain, and deceitful study." So what do you do if the science that you want to pursue, that you want to study, is just mired in the bad imagery of magicians and astrologers and charlatans? You rebrand. You just create a whole new name and you keep doing the same old thing. So Boyle and other respectable types started calling themselves chemists, chemists spelled with a Y. And according to Lawrence Principe, who is a chemist and a historian of science at Johns Hopkins and a colleague of Dr. Newman's, over the next few decades after Boyle was working in chemistry, these chemists distanced themselves almost entirely from alchemy. They had a new name and a new outlook on science.
But it's not that they weren't doing the same work. Principe can't find written evidence that the new breed of chemists tried to refute the idea of metallic transmutation. Some were still looking to create gold from base metals as late as 1760. And in Johns Hopkins magazine, Dr. Principe is quoted as saying, quote, "Current scholarship is only now revealing how artificial and contrived the distinction between alchemy and chemistry really was. So it was seriously just a name change."
Yeah, and Principe and Newman have both worked to recreate some of the old alchemist experiments. I think this is so interesting. It kind of reminded me of our old episode on historical beer, historical brews, and they've used recreations of 15th, 16th, 17th century labware and really gone to a lot of trouble to get the right kind of chemicals, the right minerals and things that would have been available at the time. And the experiments, the old alchemy experiments, have cool names like the Star of Regulus, of antimony, or the net. The question, though, is do they work? Obviously, the ones that are supposed to turn a base metal into gold do not end up working, but some of them really do show interesting kind of chemical experiments. One recreated experiment called the Tree of Diana is described by Newman as sounding like this, quote, "If you immerse a solid amalgam of silver and mercury in nitric acid with dissolved silver and mercury, you produce tiny twig-like branches of solid silver." So it really does look kind of like a tree, and you can get that idea that minerals are something that grow from seeds and not closer to the way we understand them today.
Cool.
Thank Thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday. If you have heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar over the course of today's episode, since it is from the archive, that might be out of date now. You can email us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com, and you can find us all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.